Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a Booze Dancing Entertainment Network podcast featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy beverages. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com, and if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Hey, Booze Dancing is live on a Whiskey Tuesday for a change. We usually are on a Wednesday. It is What We Watch When We Drink.
It's Monday.
Damn. It's Monday. Forget that. We'll fix that in editing. It's Monday. What We Watch When We Drink. This is the live version of our soon to be released podcast. That'll come out probably around next week. We are streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. You can go to our website, boozedancing.com. You can put information in the chat, questions, answers, complaints, whatever. We're happy to hang out with your comments and with our guest. We are here. We have not been together for quite a while, have we, guys?
It's been a while.
And we are very lucky to have a repeat guest tonight, making his second appearance. We have Gene Cooper back from the McMahon and Tate Cocktail Company.
Hey.
Hi, Gene.
Hey, guys. I was thrilled that you actually invited me for another round.
Why wouldn't we?
Well, we had a great time last time. You have a very interesting story, and your company is obviously expanding a bit into different flavors, maybe we'll say flavors, and we want to chat with you and talk cocktails with you as well. We are also going to be talking about a movie that we all watched together. We'll talk about that shortly. How are we tonight on a Monday night? How are we, guys?
Good.
We good?
I was hoping it'll be
better now.
No complaints.
Much better now.
Well, I am here on the West Coast in Los Angeles. And we have three folks here, all in New Jersey, two near Philadelphia, one outside of New York. Gene. Gene, welcome back again. Tell us a little bit again about McMahon and Tate, what you guys do, where you guys came from, and we'll start from there.
So a little bit about the name, McMahon and Tate. If you're probably, I guess, our age, you may know the reference. When I was a kid, I spent a lot of time watching TV because there wasn't any social media. There was not a whole lot to do. One of my favorite shows was Bewitched, and I'm watching the show, and it seemed pretty cool. You know, if you know this, what it's about. It was about Samantha Stevens, who was a witch, and she was married to her husband's name was Darren Stevens, and everybody thought like the witch part was fun and cool. I thought his job was really kind of neat. And Darren worked for an advertising agency, and when I was a little kid, like that's what I want to do. And most of my career has been in advertising and marketing until we started this company. And the name of his ad agency was McMahon and Tate. So I paid a little, tip of the hat, paid a little homage to, how I grew up and how I got inspired to get, my career going after all these years. So that's how we named the company.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It was fun. And if you take a look at our brand, it's got a little bit of that throwback look, that little 60s retro style. So kind of, tip our hat to, the design and that kind of look and feel to it. About making cocktails, having a good time. That's kind of what the company's about, making drinks and learning about new stuff. So we launched the company July of 2024. Like I said, it's going by pretty quickly. We started selling online and, we're doing pretty well. We just started attending a lot of the Whiskey Fest out here in Jersey. They have the Jersey City Whiskey Fest. So that was great to get in front of consumers to see what they think about the products. In our products, we carry a line of cocktail bitters. We have 9 different flavors. We have 4 different dried garnishes. And we also have rim salts that really work well with tequila and mezcal. But when we got in front of a lot of these consumers, and this was also a sampling event for a lot of these brands. So we were next to the Michter's line. So people are coming over with their samples of Michter's, and we're making them mini old fashions with our bitters. What we did, they didn't really know what bitters like. They knew what bitters were, but they didn't know exactly what they did. So we had them try their Michter's on its own, and then we had them try with some bitters, and it was like a light bulb went off. It's like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like they didn't really know the difference of a cocktail with bitters. Not that it was a real cocktail, but an alcohol with or without the bitters. And it was kind of revolutionary in their minds, like, wow. So that was kind of neat. So we've been doing a couple of those festivals, which is a lot of fun. And let me see, it was about 2 months ago, we just picked up a distributor. So they're now, things are really...
Congratulations.
So it's a whole new ball game for us, you know, going, you know, direct to consumer. And you know, we have independent stores throughout the country we're working with and some cocktail supply stores. But we just started working with the distributor, you know, so our case volume, you know, went up like, you know, like 25 fold in a day. Like, okay, we're going to make sure we keep up the production, which we are. But it turns it into a whole different, you know, whole different model that we were originally thought we'd be going, you know, working with. So that's been kind of neat. So now we're in some stores throughout the state and, you know, just keep pushing along.
Bitters are a really interesting part of the whole adult beverage community, world, whatever, space. You don't think about them. You know, we all think of one specific one, right, first. And then, but you go into a specialty cocktail spirit shop or even a big box, you'll see so many of these little bottles. And I would guess most people will walk right by them because they don't know what they are. And they don't know that they need them because they're looking for something like beer or wine. But it must be an interesting educational process for you, teaching people what bitters, the point.
Yeah, and our quick elevator pitch is, you know, if they're not familiar with bitters, you know, I ask, like, you know, do you do any cooking? And they say, sure. You know, most people cook. I said, well, do you use salt and pepper? And they say, yeah. And I said, think of bitters as your salt and pepper to the cocktail. It's going to add a little bit of flavor, and it's going to bring all other flavors together. So, you know, it's really the seasoning of a cocktail. And then once they try those samples with the bitters, like, oh, now I get it. So it takes a little bit of education. And when we do our sampling, we do it with, you know, sparkling water, you know, non-flavored sparkling water. And a lot of people who aren't drinking as much as they used to, they started buying the bitters to use them for just, you know, their sparkling water because they can, you know, adjust the flavor and just such variety. So that's a little bit of a niche that we kind of knew about, but we're seeing, you know, more sales coming from that area too, which is kind of neat.
And they, a little bit goes a long way with
right.
Well,
yeah, our bottles are 2 ounces.
They're so concentrated.
Yeah, our bottles are, they're 2 ounces and you can get 35 cocktails out of them. So they will last you a while.
Wow.
And that's why we went with a broad line. So our flavors are, you know, range from, you know, a Bing cherry to Moroccan orange, all the way to, you know, our aromatic. So they're flavors that are pretty widely used versus, you know, the other brands are great, but some brands could be, you know, like smoked bacon, chipotle, you know, it's fun. It's great, but you'll use it once and, you know, you'll probably, you know, get buried with it. It's, you know, you'll have it forever.
Every couple of years, people have to clean out their drawer of bitters for all the things that they bought for one cocktail and toss. Yes. That never happens here at my house. And then you also have, you said garnishes
too. Yeah,
those
are a big seller. We have 4 dried garnishes. We have a dried orange, lemon, lime, and grapefruit. And the one thing that's neat about them is really the packaging. They're in a plastic jar, which the retailers love because they can put them on shelves and stack them. Some of the other competitors have them in those resealable bags. So that was something we thought about way back when we said, oh, what's the packaging going to look like? And even that, you have to educate some of the consumers about too, like, well, what do you use them for? Because they're really not so much for taste. It's just to give your cocktail a little bit of drama, you know, to make, you know, if you have a guest coming over, it's like, oh, all I have to do is drop this dried garnish. And it's like, wow, I got a great looking cocktail now, like you would get, you know, when you go out to dinner.
Yeah.
I think it definitely since COVID, when everyone was home making cocktails, I think people have tried to step up, at least in the cocktail world, people have stepped up their game, the homemaker, step up their game, whether it's using higher end cherries or different kinds of swizzle sticks or dried fruit. People have tried to level up their game a bit.
Kind of dress to impress.
Yeah. Dress to impress. Even for themselves, I think people are, you know, you want your own drink for yourself, even if you're not having people over, for your own self. You want something a little bit nicer. I'll take the time to peel an orange for an old fashioned.
Whether it's that or clear ice or whatever.
Or clear ice, yes.
It's funny to say with clear ice, when we're at these events, we do a little sweepstakes. Scan a QR code and you get a chance to win a clear ice cube maker. So we're right on board with you because, you know, clear ice, I have it in my glass now. It's great.
Same, same, same. Yes, yes. Well, great. Why don't we, while we talk about this, why don't we talk about, well, you sent us some samples, and our homework here was to make a couple cocktails with maybe from your website or that you guys have recommendations or on our own. We can go around the room and talk about the bitter that you used and the cocktail that you made and see how it all came out for you. Gene, you're our guest. Did you make one tonight for yourself?
And I even used my little, retro 1960s.
Very nice.
Yes. Like that. So I went off the script of our website, and there's a cocktail that I like. It's called the Drifter. And this is Japanese whiskey. I think it's a Suntory. And it's a dry vermouth. And I'm a big Amaro fan, so I've got, I don't know, about 40, 45 bottles of Amaro, although my friend has about 75, so it's a bit of a competition. It's Amaro Nonino, and then I use 3 dashes of our Citrus Grove bitters. Yeah. And the cocktail itself called for Peychaud, and I just swapped them out. It will give you a little bit different flavor, but I like how the Citrus Grove works with the Amaro. So it's got, you know, a little more of that, that zest. And our bitters have fresh lime, fresh lemon, and fresh grapefruit peel in there. So they're really heavily concentrated. If you open up the bottle, you can really get that citrus, that aromatic coming out of it.
Yep. I the smell of it is just, it's amazing. For my first cocktail, I use it too. It smells great. Right. Mike, what'd you make?
I went off the website and I made a bee's knees.
Ah, yum.
So we had the folks from Waterloo on, and I found myself with an overabundance of gin. So I used the prickly pear and rose gin, so it has like a little pinkish color to it, and lavender and the honey. It's pretty good.
Very good.
Very nice.
And what'd you do?
I actually went with the bee's knees as well.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, because I had a lot of gin. I was going to try something with the Citrus Grove, but I just didn't have the ingredients, so... bee's knees. I have a Japanese gin that I used, and you know, made a quick thing of honey syrup.
Yep,
and there you go. So nice. It's good. It's really, really nice.
It's good.
I did a little riff on the Santa Clara, except I used mezcal because that's my go-to. Lemon juice. I used maple syrup and the Orange Grove bitters, and some sparkling water. And it's really, really refreshing. It's a, you know. I don't know. I've never thought this combination makes so much sense. It all works well together.
Yeah. We try to find recipes that would expand people, like looking beyond the old fashioned, looking, you know, beyond the Negroni. Although, you know, everybody loves them. They're great cocktails, but we just want people to think a little bit, oh, there's other things I can do and have all these different combinations work together. So, you know, it was fun putting those recipes together on the site.
I never thought of putting bitters into like just water. That's a really interesting idea. Just like sparkling water or something.
Yeah, it works.
That's a good way to use bitters up that you got sitting in the house.
That's true.
That is really, really good idea. Well, cheers, guys. Gene, thanks for coming back. Thanks for the samples. So the other part of us being together tonight also here on What We Watch When We Drink is the watch part. And we, the assignment was a movie from a couple years ago, am I right?
Yes, 2023.
Yeah, called The Holdovers with Paul Giamatti. And it was Angela's idea, I believe. And it's got a holiday theme to it, I believe. So, Ange, you have a little summary of the
flick? Little rundown?
Little rundown? Yeah.
The Holdovers. Release date was November 10th, 2023. So a little over 2 years ago. Budget, $13 million. Gross box office USA and Canada, $20.3 million. Opening weekend, $211,000 USA and Canada. Gross worldwide, $45.7 million, which surprised me.
In 2 years.
Well, I mean, gross worldwide, I assume that's box office, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm actually surprised that it made that much money, but it was good. Okay, IMDb score, 7.9 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, 97%. Metascore, 82. The tagline, in 1970... A curmudgeonly history teacher at a New England boarding school remains on campus during Christmas break to supervise held-over students and ends up forming an unlikely bond with a brainy but damaged troublemaker. director Alexander Payne, writer David Hemmingson, and stars are Paul Giamatti as Professor Paul Hunnam. Yeah. Dominic Sessa as Angus Tully. Daveen Joy Randolph as Mary Lamb. And then there's a whole bunch of other people that I really don't know who they are. But what I found funny is the Korean kid.
Yeah.
Yi Jun Park. His name is Jim Kaplan.
Really?
I'm like, what?
What?
I found it funny. I was like,
that's okay. That is funny.
So, but anyway, so that's the, you know, brief synopsis of the film.
Quick thoughts on it. Gene, quick thought on the movie?
Yeah, you know, I've seen it when it came out, and I watched it again last night. I look Paul Giamatti, and the story itself, to me, it's almost about, in a weird way, redemption. You know, what happens with Paul Giamatti at the end. You know, things on the surface don't really work out, but you kind of think like, yeah, I think it did work out for him because it gave him another opportunity an opportunity to do what he really should have been doing. So to me, it was a little bit about that second chance for, you know, the two main characters. I like the movie. Yeah, I just like the whole time period and that feel too. It was almost like a Dead Poets Society vibe to it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I could easily, if I didn't know anything about the movie or about Paul Giamatti and just turn this movie on one night, I'm watching a movie from 1971. Yeah. It really did well about creating that feeling from the music to the way it was shot. It felt like a movie of that era. It's funny you said curmudgeon. What was that line about?
Curmudgeonly history teacher.
Isn't that you can say that about everything that Paul Giamatti's, every character has ever been?
Pretty much. Yeah.
He wears that well. He wears that skill well at that, that odd, quirky man.
He's a life-worn, well-worn guy.
He is a well-worn gentleman. Yes, yes. He's well-worn.
He's weathered.
He is weathered. And it's funny, he's probably not that old either, but he always seemed old.
That's a good question. I'm going to have to look up how old he is. You guys keep talking.
I think I was...
No, I'm curious.
I was...
And you know his dad was, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. I was telling this to Andrew a few days ago. Bart Giamatti.
Yeah.
Yeah. Commissioner of Baseball for a very short time.
Oh my God! Guess what? Paul Giamatti is our age. Mike and I's age.
Really?
I'm not sure how old you are, Gene, but we're 1967.
I'm 64. Wow. Hence, watching Bewitched as a kid.
Yes.
There you go. Wow. Damn. So did we. There was nothing else. I mean, you know, Bewitched, Hogan's Heroes.
I was watching the first ones. No.
Gilligan's Island, all that good stuff. But anyway,
yes. Great. I really enjoyed it. I thought
By the way, actually, we're older than Paul Giamatti by about 3 months.
And I've been told I'm more of a curmudgeon. So,
so he's a professor at a boarding school, all male, and he is stuck watching half dozen kids, four kids, I guess, in the beginning, five, six kids in the beginning.
Five or six,
Over Christmas break, he has nowhere to go. He has no family himself, there's these five kids don't really want to be there. Of course, they can't, for whatever reason, they can't go home to their families for the holidays. This is a school in somewhere Massachusetts, in the wintertime, it's snowy, cold, bitter. So it's just going to be him and these boys, plus the cook from the school and some maintenance person, I guess, is that other gentleman's job, on campus for a couple of weeks. And Mr. Giamatti, you know, or professor, what's his name? I can't remember. Think of his name. Paul
Hunnam.
Professor Hunnam. He is going to take this seriously because, you know, kids today, they just don't, they're not serious about stuff.
Can we call him Walleye?
You could call him Professor Walleye. And he is going to make them go through the paces during Christmas vacation. And even though they should be like having fun. And then through whatever, five of the kids get to leave. Five of the six kids get to leave because one rich kid's dad sends in the helicopter for them to leave to get out of town.
What was he, the president of Pratt & Whitney or something?
Oh, yeah, that Pratt & Whitney, yeah. And they all get to leave. The other four kids get to leave because they get their parents' permission. And our one remaining boy can't get hold of his parents. His mom and his new stepdad. Yeah, no cell phones.
There'd be no movie.
Gone. And they went to like St. Where'd they go? They went
St. Kitts? No.
Somewhere in the Caribbean. And can't be gotten a hold of. And now he can't leave because he doesn't have permission to leave. So he has to stay on campus with Professor Walleye. And they've already are off to a bad start from one of the early scenes in class on the last day of school. And so this is not going to go well, as you might expect. Did I catch that? Yeah. Is that pretty well? Pretty well.
Yeah, that pretty much does it.
So then they've got to figure out, you know, what's he going to do what are they going to do for 2 weeks? And it's just that him and the chef, the cook, this woman who's been there for a while, and her son was a student there, African-American, goes off to Vietnam, is killed in Vietnam. And so she's still mourning that loss. And so she stays on campus as well, because someone has to cook for the kids. And also this other gentleman who's whatever his job is on campus. Maintenance. So she's actually pretty important, because she gets Paul Giamatti to really think harder about how he treats these boys and this one kid. What was his name?
Angus.
His character? Angus. Yeah.
He's a Jersey kid, by the way. I think he's a Jersey guy. He's from the Jersey Shore.
Angus. This is his first movie, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. He looks so familiar. What is that? Has he been anything else? Well, we can come back to the individual people, but he's smart, but he's got some issues. We don't know what the issues are initially. And Giamatti's tough on him. And this Mary, the chef cook, she tries to get Professor Walleye to kind of chill out and let the kid have some fun. And it kind of mellows out. And then it's a journey for all these people as they, the rest of the movie for them, and they go to Boston against the rules somewhat to get away for a couple of days. And it's a journey for all three of them. They all have their own story. They all have their own backstory, and they're all trying to get through that story. And they sort of do it together to kind of get to a better place at the end of the movie. So it's kind of a broad landscape of the flick. I really liked it. It's a beautiful setting. I'm like you, Mike. Giamatti's great and everything. Yeah. He can just, like you said, read the phone book, and it's great. Yep. I was just saying this a few days ago, I just finished watching the American Revolution documentary from Ken Burns, and they had special guest voices throughout the whenever there was a historical character talking, and Paul Giamatti played John Adams in the John Adams miniseries. And so when John Adams was speaking in this documentary, they got Giamatti to be the voice. And it was great. Typecasting. Yes,
he's the only. It's the only president I'll ever get to play.
Yeah, curmudgeonly old John Adams. He can never play Washington or Lincoln.
So, hey, by the way, yes, Angus, born in Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
There you go.
Whoa! Look at that.
Local boy. Look at that.
That is so funny.
Local boy makes good.
That's right. You're talking about Giamatti. You know, and you also mentioned Walleye. You know, his character had that lazy eye. And they said that he wore a contact during the whole film. It wasn't CGI. He actually wore a contact just to get into that character, into
That's crazy. Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah, I remember that a while ago.
It's like gaining 100. It's like, you know, whoever gaining 100 pounds for a character. That's
Here's bizarre. The question. Did he not use deodorant throughout the whole time?
Oh my God. Character
as well? I couldn't tell you.
He's got all these little issues.
He's using the bathroom air freshener.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Curl your toes, I tell you. Curl your toes.
He's got all these little issues, and he's critical of Angus, but he's got his own problems, most definitely, right? And he hasn't come to grips with any of them. We find out that he's got a very interesting past later in the movie, and he realizes he's not much different than the kid. Right? There are all these kind of normal, pitiful people and trying to get through life and trying to figure things out. And he's much farther down the road because he's older, and Angus is just starting out, and he's got this problem with his parents, and he's got depression issues, and which is really interesting hearing depression issues about in the 1970s, you know, and kids on some sort of medication. Interesting seeing that in a movie.
Well, he and Jumanji's character are on the same 70s. Medication, if you remember that scene.
That's right. That's right.
I think it was Librium, which maybe,
I think it was right.
Lithium now. That sounds right. Lithium would be for bipolar, but yeah, interesting that they were both on the same.
Yeah.
I also like the fact that it kind of pokes fun at these privileged schools and they keep referring to themselves as Barton
right.
men. Barton men. Like it's something special. And then you realize, maybe it's not what it's cracked up to be.
No, definitely.
At the end of the day, there's still people.
No. And, you know, there's definitely, there's a huge dig towards that sort of elitist kind of prep school attitude. And from the top on down to the headmaster, you know, he's definitely got attitude. And you can see it kind of running through some of the kids. And they don't want to be there. You know, it's an old story, you know, better than going to military school. And as Angus is, you know, threatened in his life.
Yeah, well, the concern with going to military school then would, you know, be ending up in the war.
Yeah. That's right. 71, there's still a chance of going to Vietnam or getting drafted, going anywhere, you know. It's pretty tough. So it's funny. It's poignant. A little bit slapsticky. I watched it in two halves, and I think I stopped watching during the chase scene in the school as Giamatti's. Angus is being chased by Giamatti. I thought Giamatti was going to have a heart attack.
Yeah, the stairs in the hall and everything, grabbing the railing.
That was hilarious.
I felt his pain. I felt his pain.
Yeah.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah. That's when I stopped.
When I catch you, I'm going to kill you.
The first half of the movie is nuts. I thought, oh my God, this is becoming a screwball movie. You're right. This is a very big change in the movie right now. I can feel it. And it was.
I wash my hands of you. I was being metaphorical. Of course you were. I think you were washing your hands.
Oh, and Giamatti is so funny. He's a history.
Ancient history.
Ancient history. And he's just endlessly referencing historical.
All the stuff.
Oh my God, it's endless. And everybody just has a blank look on their face. He's like the most boring guy in the world.
When he's lecturing Santa Claus about the origins of the Santa Claus costume. Technically, he should be wearing sandals, but you know, that'd be a little more appropriate.
So he might have some social skill problems, I'd say.
Don't be honest.
I thought he was fine. I didn't see any problems with it.
That party, the Christmas party at the woman's house, who's from
Carrie
school.
Preston. Yeah.
Yeah. That took me back to my dad was a public school teacher and having these year-end parties at my parents' house with all the faculty over, everyone bringing, you know, a Jell-O mold or cookies or whatever.
Ambrosia.
All the coats are thrown onto one bed. People are probably driving home not the way they should be. Big bowl of punch.
You mean the good old days?
The good old days, right? Yes. Where there was no bitters at that party. No. I promise you, there were no bitters at that party. There was a lot of
There was bitterness.
Lots of bitterness. No bitters. Yes.
Holidays. Come on, man.
That scene when Angus is walking down into the basement, and I felt like I was in that basement at someone's house at some point in my life. You know, with the drop ceiling, and you go down and. In the basement, like, well, now it's all filled with little kids. It's like, you know, this is not what I was expecting walking down with, you know, his niece.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I wonder where that was going to go with him and the girl. I thought that the niece. I thought that was going to go somewhere, but
it was. And then, you know, they got rudely interrupted by.
Yeah, they got rudely interrupted. And that was, you know, the poor kid just had his, you know, first couple days of freedom, like just squashed, you know. which it spoke a lot about his situation, being stuck on campus because his mom is off with her new husband, and he's got to just deal with Professor Walleye. So
yeah, it captured a teenage boy perfectly.
Yeah.
We'll just drop her off, and then we'll come back.
Because there's a girl here,
and she seems interested, and I don't want to lose that.
Yes. And Mary's there when she's still trying. She was the one that kind of got them to go to the party, and she's still really, really having problems with losing her son and with her playing the records. And that one guy asked one to put on something else or asked to
change. A little more hip.
Yeah, and she's, no one's touching that record. No one touched the record.
No, I'm not messing with her.
No way. Where is she from? She looks familiar.
I don't know. She looks really... Yeah, she does look familiar.
She's a Tony nominated for playing the Oda Mae Brown role in Ghost.
Oh, wow.
And she is the police officer in Only Murders in the Building.
Oh!
And she was Emmy nominated for that. So she actually won the Academy Award for this movie. And she's got an Emmy nomination and a Tony nomination.
Oh,
so
my gosh. Wow.
She's not a slouch.
What is her name?
She was great.
And she holds her own with... She holds her own with Steve Martin and Martin Short and really does a great job in those.
Joy Randolph. Well, we're sorry, Ms. Randolph. We honor you. You are awesome. And and like Mike said, you're so good in Murders.
Only Murders in the Building.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I think your name might be Divine, not Devine.
Oh, Devine. I think it might be Divine.
Got it.
But I don't know that for sure.
Okay. Well, right. I'll go with that.
Yeah.
But
She's
really good. She's really good.
Okay, let's take a little break here, and we'll go back and talk some bitter stuff. Bitter stuff.
Have another drink, you mean?
Well, we'll come back to that. Let's talk about the process a bit. We talked about this before, Gene, and I remember you kind of talking about how you kind of work on this stuff, like at your kitchen table a little bit, and originally. Where do the flavor profiles come from?
Part of it has to do with my marketing background. I wanted, knowing that bitters can last for many years, and also knowing that you're not going to get a lot of repeat purchase unless you're an Angostura or a Peychaud for the most part. So that was my first thought. Okay, so I need to come up with a broad line. Like I said earlier, I've got the cherries, the orange, and the citrus. So I wanted to come up with a line that would go with every base spirit. So our 9 bitters work with every modern or classic cocktail, and you can also put them into others. So once I kind of had that in the back of my head, okay, I know I need the line to go this deep, and also with tiki, we have a South Seas that work really well with tiki bitters, tiki cocktails. Then I started working on the formulas, and I would take a look at some recipes from some of the books that are out there, and I'd play around with what was already published, and then I'd start to put my own spin on it, and I actually did some focus groups with friends, and I sent bottles to people. I actually sent to the people on the West Coast to make sure the packaging, was okay. I did a lot of testing, probably for about 6 to 9 months beforehand. Right. Once we got the flavors dialed in for all 9, I then had to send them to the TTB, the Tobacco Trade, Tobacco and Tax Bureau, because I wanted to get them approved as a food extract so I could sell them into, the ShopRites of the world, the supermarkets. Right. And also, it's a lot easier to get them. You don't have to go through all the legalities if you're creating an alcoholic product. So I went through, it took me about a year and a half to get all 9 approved, because the TTB is very particular about which ingredients you can use. Are they considered being safe? Like I had wormwood in one of our bitters, and they wouldn't allow me to use wormwood. So I had to redo the formula. And when you redo the formula, you have to recalculate your ABV, your density. There's a lot of math that went into it. We actually ended up using a lab out in the West Coast to get some of these tested. So that's how we came up with the flavors. It was really more of a marketing approach, and also what we thought would work, across the board. So that's really how we came up with them. But it was a process to get them all approved. And it's almost like winning the lottery when you get the notification back. Oh, yeah. So that's kind of how we came up.
And I assume it's a certificate for each one.
And after a while, you kind of get the hang of it. But also what happens, our citrus grove, I mentioned they have grapefruit, lemon, and lime, actual zest in it. So when you have those zest peels put into your batch, there's water content, there's moisture. So it's going to reduce your ABV. So we had to calculate for that. Same thing with our cherry. Some of the other products, like our foam root beer, there's no fresh citrus in there. So it was easier to get those approved. So you have all these nuances for each one of your formulas to get them back. And then when they come back to you and they don't approve them, you have to make the changes, but you don't want to change the flavor profile around. So you have to tweak it ever so slightly so you maintain the integrity of what you wanted at the onset and to come back with the same thing.
Right.
Do they tell you why you're rejected? Why one is rejected? Do they say what
they
the problem is?
But they don't give you a full description. And I actually had to track down the chemist who signed off on it. I found him on LinkedIn. He's like, how did you find my email? Well, I did. So, track him down. I won't mention
him. I'm standing outside your house.
Yeah, he's a really good guy, but they don't make that information public. I just know his last name, so I was able to find him. And that helped because once I reached out to him, he gave me a better explanation of what needed to be done. That's how we came up with the flavors.
So then you've got these, you've talked to friends, you've messed around with flavors. Do you take those classic cocktails yourself and make them per like some, you know, the standard recipes with these things to see it tastes fine on its own or it tastes fine in water. How is it really going to be?
That's a good question. Drink? So what we did, we took the old fashioned and we made it based on, you know, the classic recipe. Then we swapped out the aromatic bitters and we tried it with our cherry bitters and it changes the flavor profile around. And then we tried it with the orange and it changed the flavor around. Then we tried it with the cherry and the Moroccan orange. And it's like, wow, that's a really good cocktail. So that's what we do. We took the classics and we did, my friend's got a nice bar in his house. And one night we said, let's go all get together. And we did focus group with cocktails, not a bad way to go, but I was taking notes and I was like, okay, this is working. That doesn't work. This is a little bit too, this citrus may be too concentrated or the orange was tough, just to get the orange profile across because, you're competing against, Reagan's, you got Fee Brothers, you got Angostura orange, and they're all great, but we're trying to come up with something that can compete with that in terms of flavor and aroma. And we finally did, but that one took a while. But a lot of trial and error.
That's really interesting and fun, it's just of course, but tedious too, right? I mean, it's got to be a little frustrating.
Every batch takes about 2 weeks to infuse. So if I get a rejection letter from the TTB, okay, now I know I've got like another 3 weeks. I got to get ingredients, got to infuse everything, filter it out, and then send them a sample. That's why it takes a lot of time.
Crazy. Well, we have a second cocktail from everybody. The three of us did. So, Ange, what did you make on your second one?
And which bitter did you use? I went a little more straightforward. I just did an old fashioned.
Me too.
I used some tin cup rye. I used the Bing cherry bitters, a little simple syrup, a little, orange peel, and a cherry. And of course, a clear cube. Because that just does the job.
Exactly.
That's just better.
It is.
Mike?
I did a spin on the Heart on the Run from our good friend Andre's
book. Oh, nice.
His country cocktail book, where it's used some Elijah Craig 18, the cherry juice, some cherries, and the Bing cherry bitters. Mm. I had made this for our conversation with Andre, and I enjoyed it so much. I was like, ooh, Bing cherry bitters. I'm going to bring that back again. That was good.
That's nice. I used some of the Milam & Green rye and the Bing cherry bitters and maple syrup just for an old fashioned. And I too used a clear cube and it's really good. This is actually the second one I made. So
oops.
Yeah, I really like the smell of each one of these.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the cocktails too, but the individual bitters. I never really think about the smells of bitters. We think about the smells of spirits. We think about the tastes of bitters in our cocktails, but I don't think about the smell of them.
That was separately. One of our intentions as well, is to make them very aromatic. And again, that's with the whole trial and error process. I mean, if you open up, I think I sent you guys the morning coffee bitters, when you first got them.
Yep.
You open those up, last time around, a cup of coffee from across the room. Because we over-concentrated with those ingredients. So the Bing cherry, We've got, you know, a couple of pounds of these Bing cherries in their own natural syrup when we infuse them into the alcohol. And nothing's added. We don't add any sugar. There's no additives. There's no nothing. It's all natural. In fact, on our labels, you could see all the ingredients. I know some brands would put, you know, and spices. Everything you see on the label is everything that's in there. So there's, you know, completely transparent. Even with, you know, the Moroccan orange, there's, you know, the fresh orange peel. And you open that up, you're going to smell oranges. Even with our garnishes, too, so, the same thing. I open up a bin where everything is stored, and you can smell, you know, the flavor or the aromatics just waft across the room. It's great.
What's the ABV?
Everyone is 40% or less. So they're not higher. Yep. And that was another thing. We didn't want them to be highly proofed because it tends to offset the balance at times with the cocktail, depending, like if you're making a Manhattan, if your bitter is too high in proof, it could throw the Manhattan off a little bit, depending on, you know, the ABV of the rye. So 40 or less.
What is the, not asking for a trade secret here, but are you basically infusing these flavors down, concentrating them down in some infusion, and then adding a base spirit? So to get,
it's a neutral grain spirit for the most part that we're infusing with all these ingredients. Yeah.
You're infusing them into. You're not infusing them separately and then mixing spirit into.
Now, some other people, what they'll do, they'll make tinctures, which would be one ingredient infused in a neutral grain spirit. So you could have like one of our bottles, if it has seven ingredients, you could have seven individual bottles of tinctures, and then they're all blended together, and you start to balance it around, almost like balancing music. That's a bit of a process, and it's more for, you know, like doing it at home. But it's another way to go. Ours are just infused in the, you know, neutral grain spirit, or some of ours actually use a rye. You know, our grain spirit, our spirits are rye to give it a little bit extra flavor.
Huh. Wow. So it could really be a kind of a fun little project at home to play
around.
Well,
that's how this started. Flavors. Yeah, I started doing this at home. Yeah. And someone said, oh, you know, do you ever think about, because people like them, said, oh, you should start your own business. And I ran my own ad agency. It's like, you know, I spent, you know, a dozen years running, you know, my own business. I don't know if I want to get into this again, but this is a different animal.
Yeah.
This one's fun.
It is.
Are you still running both businesses?
Now, the agency, I ended up selling it to my business partner, and that was in 2012. I have to remember that. Yeah, it was like 12 years ago, 13 years ago. Yeah, so I ended up going over to the client side.
This is your pretty full-time gig now, somewhat, pretty much?
Oh, wow. So you're like the in-house guy. For Okay.
Wow. That keeps them busy, especially now working with a distributor. Again, it's like, okay, you know, tip the scale a little bit. It's a little bit different than I thought it was going to be. Mm. But it's good. It's all really good.
So it's got to be pretty competitive, right? Because I know the stores, I forget the big box, well, the big box stores too. The area of bitters, it's growing. Yeah. And then you go into a specialty store, there's like hundreds of these little bottles. From all kinds of brands.
If you look globally, there's probably 400 to 500 brands globally. But if you take a look in the U.S., we're out in California, Napa, and there's a marketplace there, and they actually have, they feature bitters, and there was probably 24 brands, like the big guys, like Floyd's, which is, all these brands are great. It was Floyd's, they had the Bitter Housewife, Bitterman's. There's a lot of brands out there. But what I'm finding in Jersey, the main competitors are going to be Angostura, which you're never going to displace. That's the go-to. I have a bottle of it.
Yep.
Hella Bitters is pretty big. Fee Brothers is big. And Fee is interesting because, I mean, they got a great product line. They've been around for like over 100 years or so. And they're a lower price point. But they're also, they have glycerin. So you're going to get a different mouthfeel. And a lot of them, I don't believe there's any alcohol in them. If it is, it's minimal. So you get a different experience. And what's working for us, this is why the distributor picked us up, because we're a premium product. So our retail cost per ounce is about $7. The competition's about $5. So we're a premium, but our distributor has, out of his 1,200 accounts, probably 100 accounts that are more in that gourmet, higher end, you know, zip codes. So he's like, this is a great fit for us to, you know, these different pockets throughout the state. So, you know, our competition, it depends on how you look at it.
Have you seen it? Have you gotten into any bars?
Not yet. There's a couple of independent ones that we've done like in the last year or so, but those are really just one-offs. Nothing really.
That's got to be pretty tough. They probably don't want a whole lot of different bitters in a bar per se. I'm guessing most bars, they want the basic stuff. And
yeah, the one thing we got into, one is a Mexican restaurant, and they feature mostly mezcal cocktails. So I was there one night. I went to Coco dinner mole. And we were talking about it. I went back and I gave them a bottle of the Coco Mole. And then they ended up, you know, ordering that because it worked really well with the mezcal. Nice. So you get those one-offs, which is, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's nice. You know, it's validating.
Well, you had said last time you were on that with the whole, you know, NA movement where people aren't drinking as much, that the dried fruits and stuff and the salt.
Yeah, the garnishes through our distributor, I think the garnishes are almost outpacing the bitters right now. Yeah. Okay, and cool. The salts, because we have three salts. We have a pink Himalayan, we have a zesty lemon, and a chili lime. And those are really niche for, you know, the tequila and the mezcal cocktails. So they're moving, just, you know, we're taking a niche and then a niche of a niche, you know, which we kind of knew. But yeah, the garnishes people really have been taken to because it's easy. You know, they're in a jar, you open them up, and there's like 35, you know, slices per jar. So that's going to last you, you know, a good couple of summers. And it's easy if someone's making a cocktail at home and they have 4 to 6 people come over. It's like, boom, it looks like a great cocktail, you know, pretty easily.
Go ahead.
Yeah, what's the shelf?
So the bitters, again, we had everything tested. They are shelf stable. So the bitters, if you keep them in room temperature, out of the light, they're probably going to be good for about 5 years before they start losing their, you know, aromatics and their flavor. The garnishes, probably like 2 to 3 years. You know, again, if you keep them out of the light and, you know, because they're completely dry. They're dried for like 10 hours.
It's funny because I have a bottle of Angostura. I think it's got to be 15 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You use a couple of drops. I don't use it that often. And I only use a couple drops at a time.
You'll just lose the potency, right? Yes, that's what you're going to lose over time.
Lighten up.
You probably won't die.
You will not die. Yeah. All the alcohol in the drink is going to
And I know I kill asked off this before, but how much is a dash? Is it a full vial? Like 10 drops?
That's a good question. So it would be 10 drops, but with our dasher bottles, not dasher bottles, with our dropper bottles, if you squeeze out a half of that that pipette, that would be a dash.
Yeah. Okay, so half a pipette is a dash. Yeah. All right, good to know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's because I'm always thinking in terms of drops.
Like 10 drops. We say 10 drops is a dash.
Interesting. And that would for a dropper like this, but what about the shaker style?
I think that would be it's a good question because we're not, I think it may be like 2 or 3.
It's interesting watching bartenders because I don't know what for an old fashioned, I'm not sure what the numbers, the formula is in the generic recipe, but I see bartenders just like, it's endlessly or almost none.
Are you familiar with, the name Southern Teague? He owns Moria Margo in New York. He's the restaurateur. He's like the guy for bitters. If you ever listen to him speak, so he's a great source of knowledge when it comes to bitters, the history and, you know, everything about him. And I refer to him a lot just because I've learned a lot just listening to him. But he was talking about that the bars, you know, with the dash, the dasher bottles, that it should be like two shakes, but you have to do it in a certain motion and that's how it stays. Yeah, there's a science behind everything. But he was explaining, it's like, that kind of makes sense. But you're right, some of the bartenders will just, you know, shake it like Heinz.
Crazy. Oh, really good. I love that. I love the old fashioned. Let's get back to the movie a little bit. We talked about the people, the our faces here, before we go back to the end of the movie. So Jamadi, this divine Joy Randolph, Dominic Sess is the kid, right? So Giamatti's amazing, right? He's your age, right? And you said
he's Mike and I's age. Yes,
New Haven guy, famous dad. Was his dad the president of Yale? Right, Mike? Is that right?
Oh, is that all?
Yeah, only president of Yale and the commissioner of baseball and banned Pete Rose from baseball. It has this great, amazing career, you know, from theater to movies. I don't think he's done any TV per se, except maybe like
He did Billions and he did
Billions, that's right. That's right.
He did John Adams. I'm sure he did something else.
But mostly movies, right? I think he's got a couple. Does he have an Oscar? But he's definitely
two nominations. I mean, and maybe like six nominations for Emmys. Never for Billions, though. He's never nominated for Billions.
Private Parts. He played Howard Stern's boss.
Big moment. Big
moment. Right.
Yep. His first big stop.
So great. My Best Friend's Wedding, Saving Private Ryan, Man on the Moon, American Splendor, Sideways.
Have you ever seen American Splendor?
I did. Yes.
He's really good in
American. Really good. It's Sideways.
Guy too, because he's crazy. Paul Harvey, that guy's crazy.
Paul Harvey's crazy.
That's one of my favorite movies. Sideways. Yeah, there's something about it. Maybe it's the Napa region again. I don't know. I just gravitate towards that.
That's just all. And what's his name? Hayden Church.
Hayden Church.
Yeah.
Virginia Madsen.
Sandra Oh.
Yeah.
Yep. Sandra Oh was married to Alexander Payne at one point. I think they were husband and wife for a while.
Alexander Payne being the director of
all these things, yes.
Yes. Sideways, Win-Win, Private Life, Planet of the Apes, Robots, The Illusionist, Fred Claus, The Ides of March, 12 Years and a Slave, Saving Mr. Banks, Love and Mercy, Straight Outta Compton. I don't remember him being Straight Outta Compton. What was he in that?
Was he the record producer? In the studio? Yeah, I think so.
Best Supporting Actor for... his portrayal of Joe Gould in Cinderella Man, and Best Actor for playing disgruntled teacher in The Holdovers.
Title role
in John Adams and Showtime series Billions. Nominations for Too Big to Fail and Downton Abbey. I don't remember him being in Downton Abbey. And also in a Netflix episode, a Black Mirror episode. Just a great character actor, I guess. I guess he'd be considered a character actor, but I mean, you don't.
He's a character.
He's, he's definitely a character, right?
And he acts. So, yeah,
he's a character actor. Yes. He's so good. And he's perfect for this role. He's just disgruntled is one thing, and curmudgeonly is another, and highbrow, thinks he's highbrow educationally. He's just really good. I just love him. I love him. He's funny and he's serious.
And I think if you're somebody who wants to get nominated, you want to be in an Alexander Payne film because he never seems to win, but all the people that act in his movies, they all get nominated. Some win, some don't, but they all get nominated. You look at his filmography.
Payne's got a pretty good
almost every movie too. He's ever in, ever makes rather, at least one person gets nominated for the movie, which is crazy. That he just draws such great performances out of people that they all get on it. He did About Schmidt. He did Sideways. He did this movie. I mean, he's
Italian.
He's got a lot going on.
Who is?
Giamatti. His parents are from Elise Terme from Campania.
Campania. Look at that.
Yeah. Interesting. He did a lot of, he actually did some TV in the beginning of his career. Huh. Well, I don't remember him being in Singles. Interesting. Mary. Divine Joy Rand. I can't believe that's the woman from Murders in the Building.
She's the police officer.
Yeah. She's a Philly chick.
Who is?
She went to Temple.
Oh, okay.
All right. Look at that.
We got all local kids in here.
Oh, you guys. Wow. Ghost, like Mike said, Tony Four, she went on to appear in The Angriest Man in Brooklyn, Office Christmas Party. She has Christmas movies. She likes the Christmas movie thing. Dolomite Is My Name, United States versus Billie Holiday. What is that? That sounds interesting. She was in TV, Selfie, This Is Us, People of Earth, Empire, High Fidelity, The Idol. And also has won a nomination for being in Only Murders in the Building. She's from Philly. Look at that. She's from Mount Airy, Philadelphia.
Look at that.
That's where my daughter's friend is from there. That's right.
Very nice.
Wow, interesting. she's really great, and she's really good at this in this as this character, as the grieving mom who can't seem to move.
You can feel her pain.
You can feel her pain, and she's trying to move on, and it's really difficult. And
let's not forget her husband died with shipping container dropping.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that was a
before the son was born.
Yes. Right. So she's a single mom. Yeah.
And she took the job just so the kid could go to school.
Yeah. Because he would have not.
Then he winds up getting drafted and dying anyway.
Yeah. And as she said, you know, these kids are going to, you know, go on to something, but he had to go to the army. He had to go into the army. Right.
Hey, don't forget the kid wanted to go to Swarthmore. Another local place.
He wanted to go to Swarthmore. That's right. That's
also
right.
Also local. Did your daughter take the tour at Swarthmore?
She took a tour of Swarthmore. I think she did. Yeah, she wanted to go there.
Right? Swarthmore.
Yeah. People take tours of that place. They never go there.
Yeah, no one goes. They just take a tour.
And then we have Dominic Sessa. Oh, my God.
What?
You know where he's from?
Cherry Hill,
New Jersey.
A little place
called... You did, Cherry Hill.
I said that.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you went to Carnegie Mellon. It's like that's a whole Pennsylvania thing. This was his
nobody
first
went to Carnegie Mellon. Nobody.
Except Mr. Mellon and Mr. Carnegie. Holdovers was his first. Angus Tully. What was Toe? Anybody see Toe? Some movie called Toe?
T-O-W.
T-O-W.
I have not.
Now You See Me, Now You Don't. Oh, What Fun. And, oh my goodness, he's going to be in Anthony Bourdain. He's going to be Anthony Bourdain.
You know, I could
see
the
Tony in this. It's in post-production right now. It's called Tony.
Tony. Yeah.
Really? Because you know what? I look at him and I could see him being in the Ramones.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you.
He's got a kind of a punk rock vibe to him.
He does.
Look, can't you see him being Joey Ramone or one of the Ramones?
Yeah. Interesting.
Or Anthony Bourdain. He's got the hair.
Yeah.
So why not?
I just like, wow. So he's going to be Tony Bourdain. Antonio Banderas is Cicero, a restaurant owner who hires Tony. No one else in there that you know. So this kid's great. I mean, how old is he? He's
23.
Boy, he thinks like he's got the real future ahead of him. He's good. He was great in this movie.
I think he looks like a young Adrian Brody. Where, you know, I could see, you know, he's got a pretty good career. So, could see him filling those roles too.
Was there anyone else in the cast that we were interested in? I can't remember. It was the kids. That one kid, the surfer kid. He's not a surfer, but he has a surfer haircut. Yeah. He's funny. He looked like he could have been like a kid in Bad News Bears. The bad kid in Bad News Bears.
Civil disobedience, man. Civil disobedience.
Civil disobedience, yes. Who else was in that? Everyone else. There was no one in that movie that I really recognized from anywhere else.
Who's Carrie Preston? Has she been in anything?
She looks familiar, too.
Well, the only one I remember was the one who played Angus's dad, Tate Donovan.
Oh, wow.
Because he was in the OC.
Yep.
Oh, his actual dad or the stepdad?
No. Well, stepdad. I'm sorry, you're right. The stepdad.
Stepdad. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, he was in the OC and a couple other things.
He's in the OC and he was at one point in time dating Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
So he had a long arc on Friends.
Oh, on the show.
Playing her boyfriend, Joshua.
Carrie
Preston is on TV right now. She plays Elsbeth.
Oh, that's where she's. CBS,
yes. Maybe? Maybe ABC, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
She plays Elsbeth, who solves crimes with her keen powers of observation. And is a foil with your boy Wendell.
Oh, Wendell Pierce?
Wendell Pierce.
We like the Wendell Pierce.
We do like Wendell Pierce.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. Well, it's a really strong cast, even though not a whole lot of, you know, big stars in it.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's why the budget was $13
million. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good. It's great. I
like the look of it a lot. I think they captured the era really well.
Yep.
You know, they did a nice job with the location scouting, which I think, you know, you go to New England, a lot of it looks old.
Yeah.
I think they said that they had an unexpected snowstorm right before they were going to shoot.
Right.
And it really blended in. You're like, this is perfect.
Yeah. Right.
There's the waterfall scene and dam in the very beginning. And I'm 99% sure it's this little town in middle of Massachusetts called Shelburne Falls. which is outside a half hour from Amherst, where my daughter was.
It was filmed in Fairhaven, Massachusetts. Fairhaven High School.
Oh, the school itself. The school itself. Yeah, school itself. Yeah, said, I think those, like, some of the exteriors were at that.
Well, they said most of the nothing was done on a soundstage. Everything was done.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it looks real.
Yeah, and even the music. Yep. You know, Aaron, you mentioned earlier about it. They didn't like jam the music down to make you feel like, oh, that's 70s music. It just kind of felt like 70s. Right. But, you know, it really played a backseat to everything else. The music was great. Yeah.
The acoustic guitar was, in the beginning, it sort of annoyed the hell out of me. It felt like I was listening to John Denver. Yeah, that was a little There was a little maudlin and a little bit much. But after a while, it was fine. You know, painted the mood really well for the era. That was, that era was, it was perfect for 71 for that time frame for sure. I agree with you, Angie. It was just, it looked great. It felt great. It felt like the movie of the era, and the characters felt like they were from the era. And the acting as well. I mean, there was a little, the dialogue actually sounded like that era. It wasn't like people talk, they weren't talking like we would talk today. It was it was written of that era, which is important, I think. I don't know. I just really enjoyed it. And I like the journey that these three people go on and how they get through that period of time, that 2 week period, and come out better people in the end. Right.
Entrepreneurs, Aaron. Entrepreneurs.
That's right. Entrepreneurs. Yeah.
By the way, when they relocated his shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I can never watch that stuff. I have to turn my head, turn the sound down. I can't watch that.
The look on his face, the way they cut the Giamatti's face was just fantastic.
Yeah. No, I can't watch that. It's. Oh, I can hear the bones. I can hear it, actually. Thank you, Angelo.
Just a quick little pop. It's all right back where it needs
to be. Yeah. So the way we kind of ended off, that they go to Boston, and they're just the kid wants to go to Boston. He doesn't say why, but he really wants to go see his dad, who's in some sort of convalescent home, whatever,
psychiatric facility, whatever it is.
Yeah. But they get off campus and they go to dinner. They go to bookstores. They get out and about, and Mary gets to go visit her sister. Probably in her childhood home. I don't know if we know that for certain. Seeing her, I think her sister's having a baby. Was that right? Right.
Yep.
So she goes with Rock in Roxbury. So it's a fish out of water. It's a buddy kind of movie. It's definitely the journey movie, right? The story of a journey of these three felt people trying to get on with their lives and, figure out what's going on with them. And one of the real telling parts of it is when Angus and Professor Walleye are walking around in the city and they bump into a colleague, an ex-colleague. They went to, where'd they go to college? Harvard. They went to Harvard. And immediately they're catching up, except Paul Giamatti comes up with this tale of where his life is. It's nothing exactly what at all. He's like, I travel around teaching, I do all these fellowships, and I'm everywhere. And the kid kind of jumps in, I'm his nephew. And so what is going on? What is happening? And we find out that Mr. Giamatti has a troubled background and doesn't want to in his professional career and doesn't want to let this person know that he went to college with. And you said,
Bartman don't lie.
That's right. Bartman don't lie. That's right.
Bartman don't lie.
Whereas there's lots of it going on in this movie. Right. And that it really it speaks about where he is as a professor and why he's where he is, why he's still there, and at the end he finds freedom because he's let go of from his job. And but it's a good kind of freedom. He finally is released from all these this hell he's been in for a long time that he didn't realize he was in.
It helps he doesn't have to put a kid through college. That's all I'm saying. I'm sorry. Am I projecting? Was that projection? Sorry.
And he leaves with a $2,000 bottle.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
What do you mean mouthwash?
It's pretty nice too.
Yeah, but
I thought he was going to dump it on, yeah. Dump it out.
No, he just rinsed his mouth with it, right? That was it.
Oh, not the whole bottle.
That's true. Just a little bit. Just to get a little taste.
No, that's great. I think it was. Based on any novel or anything? It was just
it's an original.
I don't think it's based on it. I think at the beginning they actually said they're all fictional characters.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was.
But it's not based on a book or anything.
That I don't know.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah. It's a good story. It's a really good story, and how these three people find some redemption in their lives and or on their little journeys, like Gene said, and it feels good. It's wrapped around Christmas as well, so it's a nice Christmas tale as well. Which we don't really talk about Christmas much, except that it's over Christmas time. And right. All of a sudden, while they're stuck on campus, Mr. Scrooge Giamatti goes and gets a Christmas tree. He has gifts, although they're not that much. The gifts are all these books that he gives to kids on campus.
Marcus Aurelius, was that what it was?
The reason why you had to get a tree because the school would buy a tree from the local tree farm and then they would sell it back when the kids left. So the school was right.
Yes.
You heard the guy. They're having a hard time making money, even 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Those kind of schools are having a hard time.
Yeah. Yep. So, but there's a heart there, I guess, is the point of all that. Mr. Professor Walleye has a heart somewhere buried underneath that. 4 inches of Jim Beams that he's got covered as butt.
Angus was kind of a jerk at times, but then you saw But you saw who he really was, like when the Korean kid was all upset.
Yeah.
And he's kind of, chilling him out and kind of being nice. So he wasn't really being a jerk to the other kids that are even bigger jerks. So.
Yeah. He's a teenager. He's got going through a lot of stuff on his own. He's got, family that's broken apart and he's home he can't be away for the holidays. He's got every right to be, and he's, he's third or fourth school he's been in. He's got issues and, but he also has, there's something good about him as well.
Yep.
So, it's a nice story. It's a really nice movie.
This is my third watch of it. So
really?
Yeah. I watched it once on my own. Then I watched it with with my younger and he really liked it. I was surprised because he usually doesn't have younger, so I don't have the patience for it. Yeah. But once he got into it started rolling. He really enjoyed it.
That's good. I thumbs up for me. What do you say? 77.9 on IMDb and 97 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I think it deserves it.
It doubly. It was good. Very good. Deserve all the accolades it's received. So good choice, Ange. Very good. So back to these. Let's go back to our McMahon and Tate cocktails here, bitters and stuff. Gene, you really got a really fun product. The marketing side alone, I just love your Instagram. I love seeing the retro pictures from the 60s because that's, we're the same. You and I are the same age. I remember it really well. And it's great. It's awesome. And these things are really beautiful. Go ahead, Ange.
Your Instagram feed. How are you doing this?
How am I doing the imagery?
Like the ads, the videos.
Yeah, so interesting with the video. I woke up in the middle of the night and it was like 3 or 4 in the morning. I'm checking Instagram because now that's what I do, sadly. And I see this company called 66 Vintage Memories, something like that. And I see all these great videos. I knew it's AI. I'm looking at it. It's like all retro from the 60s. So I end up reaching out to this company. And the guy is in he was in Denmark and now he's in Bulgaria, I think. Anyway, great guy. His company produces video games, different apps. And he started doing this business on the side and it's kind of like taking off for him. So I had him produce 4 videos for us. So I wrote the storyboards for him, and he like brought it to life, and it was really amazing. Wow. We did 4 in 4 weeks. So we're gonna do, you know, we're gonna do some more in this spring. I think a little bit more, like if we could like talk about the bidders a little bit, but we found like the right retro voiceover. You know, AI is amazing. Well, it's good and bad, but for this, it's
a little scary too.
For the cost, you know, video production, I thought was pretty good. It's a little wonky at times, but I say these are, you know, just videos to, you know, like harken back to, you know, this time period. But on the other post, the backgrounds are created by, I run it through ChatGPT to get the backgrounds, and then I'm actually taking real photography of the cocktails and pulling those in, and that's how we're creating the post. But, you know, I was trying to get it it's not so old and nostalgic looking, to look like, okay, it could be today, but you're living in a mid-century modern living room and making a cocktail with our stuff. So we're kind of finding our voice. You know, it takes a little, you know, again, everything's trial and error. We test it out, so you know what people think.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
It's really fun.
Like your bartender, too. It could be like the guy from The Shining.
Yes.
You know, the bartender from The Shining. You know? That's all I'm talking about. Because he's got the look. Like he works at like an old hotel, making old-fashioned cocktails. Yeah. Not old-fashioned. Classic cocktails, you know? You know, they've got all these like 1920s drinks, bee's knees.
Yeah, we do that through our email marketing too. We run it like twice a week, and we're not really, my thing is, if I'm a consumer, like, don't keep pushing product to me. So we send out different cocktail recipes. A lot of, if you look at our website, we have a section called The Last Word, and I have like 65 articles. They're short reads, like 500 words, but some of them are like, you know, a bit about bitters, you know, mind if I smoke, you know, how to smoke your cocktail. How to make clear ice, and then there's other recipes there. So I try to provide information for people that are getting into, you know, home bartending, so they can kind of figure out the basics, you know, like what's your 5 bottles that I should buy if I'm starting my home bar. So we do a lot of that, you know, online, and, you know, also through marketing.
That's good.
Know.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are the
Old bourbon.
It's going to be your rye, your gin, your vodka. Your vermouth, I think there's a tequila, and then we go a little bit deeper in some of the modifiers.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, the people that we spoke to at some of these festivals, you know, they're really excited. Like, I want to learn how to make cocktails. Like, I take it for granted, and, you know, I'm sitting here with, you know, 3 of you. Like, we all, like, know about, you know, cocktails and how they're made. But a lot of people don't, but they want to be able to do it. So we had to rethink, okay, let's get the basics out there. And a lot of people were really appreciative. You know, we have recipe cards that we were handing out. Oh, that's how you make a Negroni. I heard about it, but I didn't know what it was. Oh, it's only 3 ingredients? Oh, that's easy. Oh, gin, Campari? Yeah, I have that at home where I can get it. You know.
Oh, that reminds me of a funny story. So I was on a Disney cruise once, probably like 10 years ago or something like that. And I'm eating in the Italian restaurant, you know, the pay-up restaurant. I asked him for a Negroni. The waitress didn't know what it was. I had to explain it.
Whoa.
I was like, are you kidding me? What the hell?
Never heard of it.
I know. I'm just like, what?
My wife just got back from Vegas, and she was telling me a story tonight that they were at a bar in a hotel, wherever they were staying, and she wanted a – oh, crap. Can't remember the name of the cocktail. You guys would know it.
Well, give me,
I don't
give
know.
A hint.
It doesn't matter, but the kid didn't know what it was, and she had to explain what it was, and it needed cream de cacao, that stuff, and they didn't have that, and so he just whipped up another drink that was, oh, you know what, I think I can get the flavors of that, and he kind of whipped up something that was just like, it was amazing, it was awesome.
That's great.
The kids today.
Yeah, my wife's a big fan of an aviation, and it's hit or miss.
I do.
And the only reason, if they don't have, you know, the violet.
Creme de violet.
So that's, you know, sometimes the bars don't have it. But I've had to rework the recipe a little bit because she likes it a certain way.
What else would you use for? I mean, what else would you use with the creme de violet? I mean, what else would you?
Bella Luna you could use it with, which is going to be, similar to an aviation. I can't think what else. Those are really the only 2.
Yeah, because the thing is, they come in really big bottles.
Yeah, it's a big bottle.
Everything does.
2 cocktails.
You know? And it's what am I going to do with it? You know, I mean, I like an aviation,
it's an old cocktail, and it was going through a phase where it was really popular. Now it's not, but my wife still likes it. So I have to batch it at home now and take them with us.
What's that? It's a gin, lemon juice, gin, lemon juice, creme de violette,
and maraschino liqueur. Syrup? Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's it. The maraschino. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And Bitter Truth has a good violet liqueur. If you use their brand, you can get that that sky blue hue. The other brands, it ends up becoming more like a lavender. So, yeah, just if you ever want to make, you know, like the true blue sky one, you have to use it.
Yeah. I got you. How about some blue curacao?
No, that's pretty much triple second. Yeah.
With, not the same thing.
Too blue.
That would not be the same thing.
I'm just saying. Yeah. I don't know.
This has been great, Gene. This has really been fun. Again, you really have a really interesting and fun line, and the marketing is just awesome. I mean, marketing is one thing, but the
execution.
Product and the execution of these products, of these bitters, is spectacular.
I love the latest.
And I'm going to try these things in just water.
Yeah, use a sparkling water.
We're doing
them in 1 ounce little sampling cups. We put like a half a dash in and just use sparkling water. And people are like, wow, this is really, you know. And we sold a couple to people that that don't really drink that much. And it's like, oh, that's great.
Yeah, I never, and you said, didn't you say earlier some cocktail, and you used two bitters in one
drink? We did it with the old fashioned, right? And used the pink cherry and the Moroccan orange, and they blend really well together. And you try them side by side, it's like, wow, it is a little bit different. You know, like a dash or two really changes the profile of the cocktail. I find it kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Mike, you said that you use the syrup from the, was it you, Mike, that said this, that you use the syrup from the cherries, from maraschino cherries.
Yep.
Whatever brand you have, as your sugar.
Yep. Instead of putting simple syrup in, I just use
it. I love it. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. It's so smart. It's so interesting when you can just change out these two or three ingredients for whatever, and you improve the cocktail that you had, or you just change the whole profile of it, and it's still an old fashioned or whatever the drink is. Yeah. Riffing is fun. Yeah, there really is. And this stuff makes it fun.
What's next?
What is next?
More dried fruits or anything?
Not expanding the line yet. I'm really just trying to get a foothold in 2026 throughout New Jersey.
Yep.
You know, working with the distributor, like I said a couple times, it's kind of changed things around a little bit in terms of production, you know, meeting up with inventory. So I want to see how that goes. And if there's a need, then we'll take a look at, you know, maybe expanding the bitters line. We have a couple of, you know, ideas, but I don't want to go too deep just for the sake of going too deep. More about it.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I think you have a great.
We've had a great lineup already.
It really is. Yeah. It's really fun. It's really fun. Well, thank you again, Gene. This will be out on, we wish you a lot of luck with this. This is just great. McMahon and Tate. I love the name.
Oh,
and thanks for the shirts, by the way, too.
My friend was yelling at me.
Yes.
I didn't get one. Really, like, oh, I forgot.
I would have worn mine, but sadly I need several sewn together.
Oh, that's funny. What we watch, when we drink, boozedancing.com. By the way, don't forget to watch the weekly or biweekly reviews on Instagram, the website.
I'm falling behind, a little,
but Mike and Angelo get on there and review pretty much whatever they have in their stable of stuff to review: beer, wine, cocktails, whiskey, all kinds of spirits. So don't forget to check those guys out. Again, this will be out on a podcast probably next week, and you can download it at your leisure. And then we'll be back soon with another episode of What We Watch.
We got a year-end recap coming.
We got a year-end recap coming. And if we don't talk
before
that, just in case, we wish everyone a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, and a Happy New Year. So, cheers to everybody. Gene, thanks for coming on again.
Thanks for having me again. It's always a blast. I was really looking forward to tonight. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers, boys.
If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.